I can't, in my mind, I've got it all settled out what I want to think about, but I can't express it. But I don't think he's got a better society for his good living that's any better than the Catholic religion. I don't think they've got anything any better. See? Because if I thought so, I'd believe it. But there's a lot of parts of the Catholic society that 60, 70 years ago, what they were doing then, today, they're doing right the opposite. Well, why did he tell us that stuff? Why, if it's right today, wasn't it right then? Why tell people something that wasn't so, if they're going to change it? They've been telling us something that wasn't so, ain't it?
The church's idea of itself changes over the years. What they tell you changes in relation to it now.
Well, they didn't do that, you know. Their old prayers and their old habit up until Pope John straightened some of that out, you know. He's the man that done all this stuff. Because a good science man has good science, has studied it and knows it. He don't believe in all this hereafter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that? Well, that's why when my father couldn't read and write, your grandparents couldn't read and write, mine couldn't read and write, somebody had to tell them. Well, now they told them their idea. Did your father or mother ask you if you wanted to go to church or here, it's time for you to go to church?
Right.
Well, now then today, is there something that you're in doubt of?
Sure.
No, I don't say I'm right. I don't say anybody do as I do, no. But I try to do just as near right as I know how. Of course, there's no excuse for not knowing how, because you can't run. There's no excuse for not knowing how. The law won't excuse you for not knowing the law.
That's right.
It's up to you to know it. So there's no excuse. You can't excuse it, just as I tell you a little while ago. There's no use in me going to you and giving you my trouble and expect you to put me in heaven. And I told that little runt in the hospital last spring. I was there.
Which particular runt was this?
I don't know, a little Italian boy. Oh,
this is St. John Bosco.
He looked about 16 years old. And he looked more like a Negro than anything else I ever met. And come in there and shot some shit at me one day. I said, you know something? You're not Italian. Yeah. Well, now I said, mister, if I tell you what I think of an Italian, you'd be mad.
Sure,
I
would have been too.
He says, why? Well, I says, in 1909, Spoit and Doyle, New York City, started in to build the road from Malone to Hogansburg. They started at Hogansburg. That was a highway construction company, Spoit and Doyle, New York City. They got up to Westville, and a Westville boy that just lived below where your grandfather kept store, Ross, Robbie Ross, was foreman on the grade gang ahead. Well, they had a camp up there by the first bunch of pines from Westville, the second bunch of pines from Westville up on the first bunch on the left, not, there's a bunch on the right first, and then there's one on the left. Well, right there where them pines are. Sport and Doyle put up a big camp, sleeping camp and a kitchen. And they had about 60 Italians. And Ross had 40 of them who were ahead, grading, building the grade of the road. And the head superintendent on the job, head foreman, you might call it, took care of the crusher and had the other 10 or 15 spreading stone and rolling stone and crushing stone. Well, when the Ross got up to the Willow Curve, you know where that is.
Sure do.
The Italians got mad, Ross. And they started after him with the picks and shovels and everything else. They drove Ross over the bank. And Ross took hell, took him down towards Westville to get the head superintendent. But Ross didn't come back. Well, I was living up on the farm, and I was going down to Westville Center with my milk, on milk wagon. And as I got, I used to stop and leave a half a can of milk to the cook cat. They'd ask me to contract with me to deliver half a can of milk. That's 20 quarts. Every morning, they cook it in the camp. They fed them Italians right there, but it was an Italian cook, but he could talk English. The rest of them couldn't. Well, Ross started and went down. Well, I don't know what went around or what happened. They said that they were going to kill Ross. Robbie Ross, well, I knew Robbie. He lived just a little below George Chapman's there. And when I was delivering the milk, a superintendent came over where I was. He says, Mister, he says, could you boss the mess of those Italians, he says, make them do what they ought to do. I says, what do you mean? Well, he says, I've been asking around somebody, a foreman, and they referred me to you. Well, I says, I have been on construction before, but I says, I don't know as I care to. I says, I've got a lot of farm work to do. Well, he says, I'll give you $3 a day. He says, you take charge of that head gang. Well, I says, you don't know much about me, and I don't know much about you. Maybe we could get along, maybe we couldn't. Well, he says, I won't quarrel with you. If I don't like what you're doing, I'll tell you, and I'll show you what I want done. He says, if you think you can do it, all right. If you think you can't, he says, that'll be all right. We won't fight. Well, I says, $3 a day in them days was a lot of money. Then. Men will work for 15, 75 cents a day. I says, I've got to go down with my milk, and I've got to go back home and tell my wife where I am, or where I'll be. He says, I'll put a man on your wagon. He'll take your milk to Westville. You write a note, and he'll take the note up with your empty cans to your wife so she'll know where you are. Well, I said, if you want to do that, he said, the men are ready to go to work. I'll take you up there. He had a car, two-cylinder Buick. You thought he'd never see one, though.
No.
Brass. Oh, the front was all brass. Had a nice old car to go bingity-bangity-bingity-bang, but it'd take you there. And so, his name was Amelius. I forget what his first name was. I think it was Walter, if I remember right, but I want to be sure of that. Amelius was his second name. I went up there, and men all followed. All in the teams, there were seven or eight teams in the dump wagons, and they were all riding on the wagons, going up on the job. So we went up on the job. Up at the Willow Curve. They were cutting that grade up the Willow Hill. And I says to Amelius, How are we going to make them understand what I want done? Well, he says, that man, he's a Spaniard. He's a different looking fellow than this one. A little darker, but he's a little slimmer than the other boy. He says he understands English, and he still talks Italian. Well, I said, you pay him extra? No, he said, we know, but he says, we'll recompense him after a while. Well, all right, I said, if he understands English, can talk Italian, I'll have to talk through him then, won't I? But I says, while I'm talking to him, I ain't expecting he's going to be shoveling. He says, that's up to you. But do as you might with it. Make him assistant foreman if you want to. He said, that belongs to me. But he says, get your work done. All right. I says, you going to stay here? No. He says, I'm going back. I need down the other end. The engineer down there all alone, he says. I don't know what he can do, surveyor. So, I haven't moved to Italian all the last summer. This is in June. Till November, I got in the mall. After we got the grading done up at the bridge, the railroad bridge, and we graded sides clear down to Fort Calvin, I took care of my assignments. So I says to the Spaniard, after he left, I says, they know what to do, don't they? He says, yes. He says, they shovel that dirt into wagons, and he says, the teamsters take it down where the other fellas are, and they spread it. All right. He says, you just tell them to do as they always done, but just keep doing. He says, all right. He did. So what you want me to do? I says, thank you, Marty. Do you want to work around here all right? If you don't, you sit right in there. Well, he says, I never suppose I'd get a job to where I could sit down. I says, you've got a pencil and paper? No, he says, I can't read and write. Well, and I says, don't bother you at all. Well, he says, no. And you smoke? No. Chew tobacco? No. Well, I says, can you play with your fingers? Yeah. Well, I sit down. I says, you ought to be doing something. Well, he says, I'd rather take a shovel and run to help the boys. I says, I thought that. And I says, you go there and you tell the boys that they ain't going to be no sons of bitches. No damning. And the first man gets into a fight. You understand? And I'll take a shovel and cut his damned head off. Now you give him an understand that. And I mean it. He said, I think you know. Well, I said, go you. Now I said, you tell him to go to work. First only time I told them anything. They done their work just as I told them. That's all I had. God delivered me from the Italian.
They never gave you any trouble?
They never gave me any trouble. But you might just as well try to understand them as a hog. Yes, they were just as dirty.
Where'd they live?
They lived in a shack down there, you know, where the pines are up there, next to Adam's
corner.
Yeah.
A shack that the guy had built, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all been to it, of course, for years. It's all built there with houses and everything. Second bunch of pines above Westville Center going up. It's the first bunch to your left. At the end of that crossroad was up towards Fay there. That's what I learned about Italians. That's what I told a little fella up there. He didn't like what I said, so. He never come back, bothered me.
Somebody get rid of him.
The other old fella come in the door one day. He's there grinning. I said, Tony, what are you doing? Playing monkey? She snapped out around and we went. I never seen him yet. I despise my Italian. I don't know what. There's some awful nice people, this Italian. got a granddaughter-in-law that died. She's an awful nice girl. You know her, don't you?
Which one's that?
Roger's wife.
Oh, yeah.
There are people in a restaurant there, moment with someone. Bruno?
I'm not sure. I know what you mean, though.
Either dead, or either are or dead, I don't know where. Madeline, she's not a nice girl. She has to wear a hearing aid. She can't hear anything from a child. Hearing aid, the bris on the bone.
Well, let's go back to the blacksmith, shall we?
All right, let's blacksmith.
Do you have a bellows in there to run the fire?
Oh, yes. It was hung up to a ceiling with a pipe. Yeah, you puffed it. The last I used was a fan.
Well, I thought you might like to hear. Did you make any of your own tools yourself?
About the time I started to learn, we could buy the most of them, most anything we wanted. Drop forge, they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And they come from Syracuse and Utica, done a lot of that work at that time. But I have made hammers, and old St. Mary would make a nice, awful nice hammer. I've made this one or two different, they weren't really hammers, they were tools. He had a hole in them to put a handle in them. But the blade of it, instead of being a chisel to cut iron with a sledge, see, you'd hold that chisel on a piece of heavy iron like a wagon axle or something, and they'd hit on the sledge and cut it off, say you're doing it with a light hammer. Well, we had tools of all kinds. We had a tool that we put into the hole of the anvil. There's a name for it, and I know it, and I just don't tell you, I guess. A dolly. It went into the square hole of the anvil. Well, this dolly set in there, and then it had a head on it. Well, some of them had a round groove through it, the size of a quarter of an inch iron split in two, see? Well, then you had a dolly with a handle that had a hammer that had that in its face of a half-inch groove. Well, when you welded a half-inch rod, it'd be rough and humpy. Well, you'd take those two tools, put that rod through there hot, and somebody'd tap it with a sledgehammer. When you got done, you couldn't tell what the weld was. You had dollied it down to the right shape.
Like a mold.
Yeah. But we had somewhere about 40 of those dollars, which we called Hardys, fitted into the Hardy hole. That's why we called them Hardy, because that square hole held the Hardy. That was a chisel that with a foot on it. You set in that hole, and you could lay an iron on there and hit on the iron and cut it, for this dolly be sharp, see? Well, all these dollies that I'm telling you about fit in the hardy hole, in the anvil, the bottom one. And the top one had a hammerhead with a handle in it. That was the dolly on top. Well, some of them, if you were welding an iron this way, and that way, and that way, well, you had that shape.
Welding in three directions.
Yeah, see? But you had that, or you could hit that when it was hot and make it very nice and smooth. You wouldn't have any hammer marks on it, see?
Mm.
Well, them are dollies. Well, there was somewhere in the neighborhood about 40 of them on your table, side of your back of your left hand. Because you held all your iron with your left hand, because you had your right hand on your hammer, or you held your tongs in your left hand.
Did you wear heavy gloves?
No.
No, just bare hands.
You go run away, that you take right over, hon, I just like that, your hands would be so hard. But as you shook hands with a blacksmith them days, it had to feel like a piece of horse, all ridges all over. It had to be awful hot if it burned you.
How was it that when you were just learning to be a blacksmith that you had a hard time?
Once in a while you'd burn your fingers, but you didn't take long to find out if it was hot. That's one thing you'd learn awful quick.
Did you wear a shirt?
No, we had an apron.
And just anything underneath it?
Oh, we had a shirt.
Undershirt.
Shirts on. But we had a leather apron with a strap from here and down and then around you.
Yeah.
And it hung down here and was split part way up across. So you put a horse's foot between your legs and have it go, uh-huh.
Mm.
Out of the leather apron, but it made out of sheepskin.
What did your customers complain about? Were they always satisfied? Did you hear many complaints?
Hmm?
Were customers often dissatisfied with the blacksmith's work?
Yes. The biggest trouble we had was in horses' feet. There's hardly a horse was ever born and had four perfect feet. Foot. Some foot was a little something wrong. But sometimes it was very, very little. Other times it was a lot. We had a lot of trouble with horses interfering, striking their feet together and make cut right in there and make them awful sore. But you had to learn how to, which side of the hoof to cut off and which not. And what to do for a shoe, making the shoe to fit the foot, you understand, around. Sometimes we'd put a heavier on the inside. Sometimes we'd put a side weight on the outside. Sometimes we'd put a toe cork on the front, off center, to throw that foot away from the other foot. It wasn't the foot that gets sore that's to blame. It's the foot that hits it over here. You got to break his stride, see, so that he wouldn't bring that foot up and hit the other one. But we had to learn in doing something with that shoe or the tip of the foot to throw that foot away, get it away so he wouldn't hit the other foot. That was our biggest trouble. Now at one time, William Johnson, Bill Johnson, from North Burke, when I was in Burke, he lived the second or third house from the blacksmith shop in North Burke, see, Jimison's. And I'd been there about 6 months in the shop. After I got down in Malone, Westville, I went from Malone into Westville for the winter. The spring I bought in Burke. Bill Johnson came into the shop with a bay horse. Bill Johnson was a horse buyer. He'd buy up horses and mate them and get them driving together and ship them to New York. Price to get a pair of horses worth just like, so get a nice price for it. Come into the shop with a horse, four horseshoes in his hand. And I wasn't acquainted with the man, I knew him. I'd seen him go by back and forth and somebody told me who he was, but I'd never talked to him. He come into the shop holding his horseshoes and hanging on to his horse's bridle, and in the summertime. He says, Mr. Langlois, he says, I've come here to find out something. Well, I says, ask me what you want to find out. Perhaps I can answer you, and perhaps I can't. He says, can you shoe this horse? I says, just a minute. Where'd you get them shoes? He says a fella up to Burke fitted them, but he said he can't put them on the horse. What's the matter? Well, he says the horse won't let him do it. Well, I see. I suppose he knows what's your horse. But it can't be he. Must be he don't. He don't know more than the horse. Well, he says, I don't know what he knows and what he don't know. But he says, I wish you could shoe this horse for me. I'm willing to pay for it. I said, you're willing to pay $2-3 to see me get my neck broke? No, he said, I wouldn't want to see that. Well, I said, that might happen. So I says, can I look at your horse? He says, yes. So I went around the horse, put my hands on him. He was on hitched into on the wagon. Buggy wagon. The horse had watched him, but he didn't do anything wrong. Well, he says, what do you think? Well, now I says, Mr. Johnson, if you will put that horse in this shop, tie him to the wall, you go at the store and stay there till I call you, I'll shoe that horse. But I want you to know while you're here. Says, why? Says, that ain't any of your business. That's mine. Now, I says, you want me to put them shoes on that horse? I don't know whether they're fitted or not. I'll fit them. They ain't. Well, he says, I think it was Murphy. He's an Irishman. Anyway, well, he says, you want to damage my horse? I says, no, sir. If I damage him anywhere at all, I says, I'll pay for it. But I won't. But I says, I don't want you around here. If you could start to come over here, when I start shooting that horse, I'll drop it right there. And what are you going to do? And I says, that's none of your business. That's mine. Well, he says, all right, I'll go over to the store. You say you want damaging. I says, I want damaging. Find any damages when you come back, I'll pay them. Yeah. So after he left, I unharnessed the horse, had him in there, put the war bridle on him, tied it to the wall, and shot him.
The war bridle?
The war bridle.
What's that?
Well, it's a quarter-inch rope with a ring in one end and about 8 foot long, or 6 foot long. That's all it is. He put that under his lip.
Put the ring under his lip?
The rope.
Oh, yeah.
Put the rope over his head. And let the ring be about his ear. Bring the rope around and under his upper lip through the ring and then pull it down. Pull it till he just don't fall down. He'd be sound asleep. Right there, on a horse, right there.
Above top, the left ear.
Top of his head.
Top of his head.
Across the top of his head, there's a little groove, like that. Where the head hitches onto the spine. And it protects that nerve just enough that he don't know what you're doing. An old veterinarian showed me that.
Oh.
And I put the poor shoes on the horse, polished up his feet, made a nice looking job. Took the rope off, took the brush and brushed with it, matched the hair a little, brushed that up, put a harness on it. Stood him in the corner, he shook himself and pulled his feet around. I went to the door and hollered, gone only about near the first neighboring store across the road. The store was open. Someone asked, I said, tell Mr. Johnson that his horse is shot. Mr. Johnson come over, picked up the horse's feet and looked at him. Took the horse all over, slapped him, called him a name, or... Well, he says, what did you do? I says, none of your business. He says, how much do I owe you? I says, $5. Fair enough, Mr. Langlois, she says. Hereafter, you'll have my report. Says I ride straight across the road from Jim Vaughan. He was a good blacksmith, Jim was. But he says, the man that'll shoe my bad horse, but Jim couldn't shoe it. He's tried it 3 different times. But he says, the man that'll do my bad horse, he'll do my good horse. Couple days, and the man drove up there with a team of grays, said he wanted him shot. When he got done, I says, who pays for this? He says, Bill Johnson. All right, charge me. He ran along a week or two, and another team come up there, black horses, shot him, Bill Johnson. Oh, I get about 5 horses a month from him, I said, oh.
Did you allow customers to charge their work?
Oh, them days was all that. Pay every 6 months, or every month, or every 2 months. More credit than cash them days.
Really? They ever pay you in produce?
Hmm?
Were you ever paid with produce?
With corn?
No. I have taken wood. But figured the wood as money. I have Ed Proper. Proper girl was a nurse then. Lived on center people lived on Brown Street. Going to Proper Street.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I know Ed Proper girl was
a nurse. Well, Ed Proper, that would be her grandfather. I talked to her about it. I heard the name was Porter. Proper. No, Jim, his father.